Welcome to IT Origins, an interview series from Gestalt IT. I'm your host, Rich Strofolino. Today, we had the privilege to talk to Oksana Sokolovsky, the interim CEO, COO, and co-founder at IO Tahoe. It was a really great conversation, and I think you'll enjoy. So, Oksana, let's just jump right into it. Can you give me an idea of your IT origin story? How long have you been in the field, and how did you get your start?
So I've been in technology for about 20 years, a little bit more than that. My journey started, very interesting. I used to pursue a psychology degree in school. I had my master's in psychology. And then kind of realized that in psychology, you don't necessarily directly solve problems. You have to listen to people and, you have to figure out how to lead them on a journey of solving their problems themselves. And I was more of a direct solver. So technology was coming up, obviously 20, 25 years ago, technology computers were kind of uprising. So I switched to computer science degree and got my master's in computer science. And it's very funny because I was just telling somebody recently, I slept through one of my classes completely. It was like an algorithmic development class, and I was 8 months pregnant, and I slept completely through it. And then I, when I actually had to face the algorithms later in life, I had to re-educate myself, which was pretty hysterical. But in any case, I was fascinated with technology because, when you grow up in a country like I grew up in, in USSR, I heard of computers, never saw one. And, when you come to US and you kind of see the landscape of the technology and the possibilities, it's pretty fascinating. So I entered computer technology field in like mid-90s and been on a journey since and kind of experienced multiple roles in technology field and financial services and grew up the ranks, through financial sector. And then ultimately for the last, I would say 12 years of my career in financial services, I led large transformation initiatives in technology, ranging from, doing large mergers like Morgan Stanley Smith Barney merger or, transforming the landscape of large organizations and moving, from one stack of technology to another or doing like very interesting business projects like statement renovations, et cetera. And what was fascinating is how fast technology was evolving and how enabling it became from, basic mainframes, to, everything is done on your iPhone and, the superpower of enablement, right? And, things kind of being automated. So that's how the journey kind of started. What's interesting, over the past 10 years, I've observed the same problem over and over, which was, the data was just growing tremendously in the organizations, and the landscape of data changed and kind of expanded. People acquired data warehouses, people moved from mainframe to more modern technologies. Now people are moving to the lakes and so on. And it's not like organizations have time to clean up, and they're constantly changing from the business standpoint, plus technology changes on top of that. So it's kind of fascinating how the assets are growing and the assets need to be managed. And in the beginning, people were managing like physical assets. And now people are more managing like logical assets, which is your data. And for me, I think the, the important, kind of light bulb moment that went up for me was figuring out that data is going to continue to grow and change, and organizations are not going to be able to keep up with that, and figuring out how to solve a problem of being able to, in that complicated landscape, how to navigate and figure out the relationships was one of the enablers for technology, and that's what we kind of decided to pursue to enable large organizations. But you know, obviously the technology journey is so vast and things are moving so fast. So I'm sure that in the next 10 years we'll see, you know, a lot more, you know, technology developments that are going to be pretty fascinating, including, you know, I can't wait to see cars flying.
Yeah. I knowing human drivers on the road, I can definitely wait for our flying car future. But so that brings up an interesting question because, you know, you raised up a number of, you know, huge trends and changes and, you know, kind of being, you know, on the financial side of it, you know, that industry itself has seen, you know, titanic changes over the past 25 years, you know, both in terms of scope, in terms of, you know, regulation, in terms of relationship with, you know, everyday people. So I'm kind of focusing on the IT side, though. Kind of what has been the most seismic change? Has it been that shift to mainframes to now, you know, everybody has some kind of endpoint in their pocket? Is it that change of you know, kind of the importance of data in the modern enterprise? You know, we hear the old saw. It's kind of a painful cliche now, almost, that data is the new oil or something like that. But is it that organizations are kind of realizing that the value of data in and of itself, not just as a means to an end?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, let me answer that. I remember when I was working at JP Morgan Chase, you know, one of the big initiatives was bringing things online on the web, you know, and building the website that's going to be cool. And now, and that was done vertical by vertical, right? So JP Morgan Chase had multiple verticals, be it auto finance, credit card, et cetera, and each one had its own website. Now you log in on your device in your pocket, and you have all of your data in a single place, independent of the vertical that is servicing your account. So if you have 10 accounts with one institution, you can actually see all of that. And in fact, you can pull other institutions into the same view, which is pretty amazing. So data has become, you know, at the heart of everybody's kind of thinking, because ultimately data drives the decisions. You know, I am a consumer of the bank, right? Forget about me even working in technology, but being a consumer of the bank, I want to know what is my financial situation, you know, what is happening with my payments, you know, what is due and so on. And through technology, the organization, you know, the large financial institutions have been able to enable their clients with very quick decision making that they can do on the fly on their mobile devices by providing them with that data. Now, ultimately, getting to that data is a very difficult, challenging task because it could sit through multiple divisions in one institution. And if you look at, for example, you know, your payment field in one, let's say, division in your bank, right? It could be called payment, and another one could be called attribute one. How do you know, what to pull? So figuring out how to pull the relevant data and how it's connected and the relationships between it still continues to be the challenge for the organizations. And I think, you know, sometimes they do it still manually, and, you know, they do put some automation, and it sits across multiple technologies, you know, sometimes on the mainframe, sometimes undistributed, you know, a lot of times now people move into data lakes and so on. But figuring out how to rationalize what data is relevant and what should I show so that we enable more monetization, you know, for the institution and more kind of client centric experience has been at the root of the problems that the financial institutions are solving. And doing it in a way that's safe and protected is another thing, right? And that's the regulation part. And I think that that's what we saw as the opportunity as well, and tried to figure out, even when I was working in the financial institutions, and now that I'm building this product, you know, we're trying to figure out how to make that data more accessible to whatever the end, you know, outcome the companies want to achieve, be it quality work, be it, you know, data analytics work, be it, you know, data governance or regulatory compliance. How do we make sense out of data and present what's relevant to the customer?
Well, and I think the challenge, especially, you know, in the financial sector, is that, you know, if you're building a company today, like if you're starting from ground zero, you're going to be building a modern business or something like that. I think the not that the path forward is easy, but it's much easier to build, you know, a modern data infrastructure when you're starting from nothing. You know, what are some of the challenges that you've seen, I guess, in the financial sector with, you know, you're talking about working with, you know, JP Morgan Chase, you know, a company that has decades and decades and decades of, you know, legacy IT, that I'm sure, you know, like you said, you know, you're kind of in a mixed environment of some people are using, some applications are using mainframes, some applications are, you know, I'm sure moved to, you know, more modern virtualization or even, you know, cloud-based approaches. How do you manage, you know, kind of the challenges of finding and exploiting data across such a, you know, kind of a heterogeneous environment?
Yeah, and that's a good question, because I think the companies are finally realizing that they'll never keep up with kind of centralizing, you know, all of the information. I think, you know, I don't know, 15 years ago when data warehouses entered the landscape, you know, people thought that centralizing the data location is going to solve the problem of having access to the data, and then the data lakes kind of were supposed to achieve the same. But ultimately, I think the organizations are realizing that data, you know, they cannot keep up with upgrading the enterprise and moving from like mainframe to more modern. And there's always going to be heterogeneous kind of landscape. So figuring out how to access that information across heterogeneous enterprise has been a discussion in many, many organizations. And we see finally that, you know, organizations are really focused not necessarily on just business functionality, but on figuring out and rationalizing data relationships. With, you know, what we do in Ayodhya, we actually enable the organization to look for information across a heterogeneous landscape, because our premise is that organizations that are huge are not going to be able to move quickly to new, more modern technologies, and they'll just continue to expand and grow in different divisions. And, you know, not everybody is going to move to the next version of Oracle. They'll still have SQL. Not everybody is going to move into the next, you know, data lake, you know, they'll still have Teradata and Informatica and so on. So what we want to do is enable people to take that heterogeneous landscape and rationalize it and make sense out of data and say that, you know, what I'm looking at in this database, and let's say this is my payment ID, and in the next database it could be called attribute one, and in the next database it could be called attribute two. It's still the same data element that's flowing through the enterprise, and it's relevant, and this is the relationship between, you know, those elements, and this is why it's important to present to the customers. So our goal is to enable the organization to make sense out of data in whatever form it may exist, not force them to migrate to the next version of some new technology. Does that make sense to you?
No, absolutely. And I think that's vitally need. You know, we get no, we talk to, you know, quite a bit of companies, you know, in the enterprise. Obviously, everyone kind of either wants to be a data company or work with data companies. You know, that's, you know, people are reading the tea leaves and see that's where kind of the future is. But not a lot of them are designed to kind of work within organizations as they are or as they will be, you know, kind of in the near term. I think a lot of people are, you know, seeing like, okay, this is a great solution, again, from starting from scratch, or, you know, if you want to wholesale implement this across, you know, a single infrastructure. And I think it's really interesting to see something that's designed for kind of the, you know, the messy reality that is most organizations, and that, you know, IT was built out by necessity, not necessarily, you know, out of a grand master plan at the very start of the business or something like that.
Yeah, yeah. And, you know, you can plan, you know, no matter how much you plan, you know, the life evolves, right, and the business will evolve. So, unfortunately, large institutions are too large to move too fast. So, you know, even like an upgrade project, I know one institution was migrating from like SQL to Oracle, for example, and they had 2 years to do it. I'm sorry, from Sybase to Oracle, and they had 2 years to do it. I mean, 2 years, a lot of things change, you know, and it's not like your data is going to stay static, and it's not like your, you know, data tables will stay static. You know, things will change from a business standpoint, from a volume standpoint. So you can plan a migration project for 2 years and you can actually execute it, but, you know, the technology has moved on at that point and you need to migrate somewhere else. So I think more and more organizations kind of realize that challenge, and because of the growth of data, you know, they're kind of figuring out, okay, I need to manage it in place where it exists, as opposed to focusing on constant migrations and, you know, transformations. And transformation is still going to be big because things get sunset and so on. But I think being able to understand your landscape is most important thing. I was just telling somebody recently, and I'm sure you can relate to this, I used to know all the phone numbers of people that I had to call, you know, by my heart. And I used to have like business cards and stuff and, you know, and file them. And because of the devices that we now have, I probably know two or three phone numbers and nothing else. You know, everything else is kind of data that exists on my device. And if that device disappears, I become absolutely disabled. And I think, you know, our reliance as a human society on data has become pretty fundamental, right? We trust the data that the institutions provide us with. So I think the institutions are also realizing that, and they're starting to manage data in a much more reliable fashion because people are starting to trust that others will have taken care of their data.
Yeah, and it also gets into the, you know, the issue of which, I mean, you're intimately familiar with data discovery, with data indexicality. You know, I mean, like at a very basic level, the reason no one remembers phone numbers anymore is because it's, you know, relatively frictionlessly available in your pocket through, you know, a very simple index of contact to phone number or something like
exactly.
that. You know, on a broader scale, obviously that becomes much more complex. But I mean, definitely a keen insight. So kind of broadening this out, though, you know, thinking about maybe trends more generally, you know, what are you kind of seeing right now as the current, you know, worst and best trends in IT right now? I'm particularly interested you know, where you see GDPR falling kind of on that spectrum of is this something that's, you know, something that's forcing kind of a reckoning on a lot of organizations, or is you know, is it something that's, you know, not going to be feasible for a number of organizations? I'm curious on that perspective.
Yeah. So the trend in technology makes me really happy lately because I think over the past 5-6 years, you know, many organizations kind of jumped into figuring out how they can monetize data, how they can, you know, start data governance projects. But, you know, they kind of addressed it from a top-down standpoint and said, okay, if we have data analytics, we can have more money or we can have more savings, et cetera. And people didn't necessarily understand the challenge of creating data analytics because it ultimately goes back to discovering and understanding your data. I think that GDPR is bringing a different focus to people, and it's making people realize, you know, that, you know, for data analytics or for data governance or to address your regulations, you really need to understand your data, and you really need to manage your data. And a lot of companies are jumping into the discovery mode. They want to make sense out of data so that they can enable data quality, data governance, data analytics, and GDPR becomes an enabler of that message because it kind of forces people to think about this. Although we haven't seen many organizations aggressively jumping into solving that challenge, I think they're moving towards that, but I haven't seen organizations kind of, you know, going wildly, you know, purchasing tools that will address that problem immediately. I think people are still kind of trying to see what's going to happen, whether it's going to be the same as data privacy in the US. But I think GDPR is much more serious and it's bringing a very different focus. And we see a lot of people kind of starting with the fundamentals. You can't really build the house without building the right foundation. And I think we're now seeing people look at that foundation, say, okay, let me look at the foundation before I start building the walls. And we see more and more people jumping into the discovery world from which they will improve the governance, improve the regulatory compliance, but they will also improve the analytics because analytics are only as good as what you know, right?
Yeah, absolutely. So is that, you know, kind of going back to, you kind of mentioned this, that, you know, organizations are going to keep, you know, looking at ways to kind of monetize, not monetize data is the wrong word, but, you know, understand the value of their data and when it has value and stuff like that. Is there any in the next 3 to 5 years, do you see that changing at all? Do you see that becoming more mature? As you know, I think a lot of organizations right now are still in kind of that scramble mode of how do we do this. Does that slow down in the next 3 to 5 years as maybe best practices become more commonly applied? Or is there like a next step beyond, you know, kind of once organizations kind of get to a level of, okay, like we figured out the basics of this data thing. What, you know, what's the next step? Is it just more advanced analytics? Is it, you know, kind of rolling in automation on a larger scale than we're already seeing? You know, kind of where do you see it going in the next 3 to 5 years?
Yeah, I think next 3 to 5 years we'll see a much more mature approach to data analytics and data in general, because I think the organizations are kind of, you know, learning from the lesson of, you know, doing the partial work, right? A lot of companies bought a lot of tools, be it analytics quality or, you know, governance tools, but they're also realizing that they may not have the full understanding of the data. So I think they're starting to tackle the problem, you know, kind of more holistically. So number one. Number two, a lot more organizations start realizing that they cannot do it via just a human effort. And I think that's where the role of machine learning and role of, you know, some of the AI starts to come into the play. And I know, you know, it's a controversial topic because a lot of people use, you know, AI and machine learning for like branding reasons. But there is a true value in artificial intelligence. If you can automate, you know, certain things, you're never going to replace a human effort completely. But if you can advance, you know, the effort through automation and have a human focus on 20% of meaningful work and automate 80% of work through AI or machine learning, that really becomes helpful to the organization. I'll give you one example from our product. You know, there are many governance tools in the market, and a lot of them, or data catalogs, and a lot of them allow the organization to kind of catalog items and put the knowledge of the organization via, you know, crowdsourcing place, you know, into the catalog. And that's good, but it still takes a lot of human work, and it's prone to human error. What we've been doing is figuring out how to bring the artificial intelligence and natural language processing and machine learning into the place so that 50% boost is given to the user through our discovery. So if we discover that an element which is called attribute one is truly a social security, we will tag, you know, in a smart fashion that item for the business as a social security, and the business is going to validate that still, you still need to have human interaction. But some of the automation is brought to the table to alleviate the manual effort. And I think more and more of that is going to be seen over the next 3 to 5 years, because, you know, data is not going to stop. It's going to continue to grow. And in fact, you know, it's projected that we're going to generate more data in the next 3 to 5 years than ever before. So with all the IoT coming online, with all of the, you know, data that's being shared, we can expect that what we have right now looks like nothing. And many organizations are preparing to deal with petabytes of data. So you definitely cannot do it manually, and you'll need to have artificial intelligence and machine learning, and that's the advances I think the organizations will see.
Yeah, I mean, it's almost impossible, I think, going forward, the idea of, you know, taking in data and kind of storing it, then doing the processing, you know, at some kind of later. I think where machine learning and AI really come in handy is, you know, kind of this world of almost near real time streaming kind of analytics. Obviously, there are a lot of challenges, you know, just to handle that kind of workload. And obviously, as those kind of things kind of grow, but to your point, you know, I think also organizations need to realize that that, as you mentioned earlier, that, you know, kind of pooling everything together and, you know, kind of thinking that you can handle everything in the same way all at once, especially when you're dealing with financial services where, you know, these are giant organizations, is, you know, is a mentality that, you know, has to change.
Yeah, financial services or, you know, take retail. I mean, retail is growing tremendously. I mean, we spoke to one retailer who already has petabytes of data and is expecting to go, you know, beyond that in the next 3 to 5 years. And I think the organizations are proactively starting to figure out, how do I deal with this? Because I'm not going to be able to keep up. So I need to have proper tools in place that allow me to manage that growth and be smart about it and start managing my data. And you're right, streaming and in-flight processing is going to become very important, and it cannot interfere with your business processes.
No, yeah. Well, and the other thing that really fascinates me going forward is not just the idea that, you know, data has value in and of itself, but that that value has a shelf life. So not just understanding what data you have, but understanding when it has value is like kind of the other challenge that's really fascinating to me as well.
Yes, yes, the relevance. And again, you know, figuring out what data do you work with and what can you archive in a smart way or put on a shelf, or what is your operational data versus your informational data. You know, many organizations are kind of getting into the mode of figuring that out so that they can sort. Because, I mean, storage has become cheap, but, you know, it's still not cheap when you have a lot of data.
Yeah, exactly. Oksana, first computer you ever owned? I'm kind of interested, you know, coming from the USSR, if maybe something our listeners wouldn't be familiar with.
I remember precisely my first computer purchase was like $5,000 computer that I bought for, I think, college, and I could not do anything but play games on it. And it was the only thing that I bought it for, because I think internet was just coming online and you could install from like disks, right? And it was like many, many years ago. It was like a huge investment. In USSR, unfortunately, we didn't have access to computers, so I had to study computer science on the blackboard, which was pretty interesting. But, you know, when I came to US, obviously, I got my first computer, and it was pretty amazing experience. But I didn't do anything but play games on it, and I still play games.
What were your games of choice on that first computer, if you remember?
I remember. I don't remember the name of the game, but it was about building colonies. I think there are games like that that exist today, but it was about building like different colonies and, you know, kingdoms surviving and so on. It was like one of the first games in that era.
Was it like Civilization?
It was preceding the Civilization.
Okay. So in that vein, though, the very, very interesting.
Yeah, and I remember you had to install it using DOS prompt.
Oh God! Oh, so that was quite a ways ago. You gotta remember to access your C drive there. Yeah. Of course, very important stuff. So what do you, Oksana? What are you doing when you're not working in IT and being a founder and a, you know, interim CEO, COO, you know, what are you doing when you're not doing all of that with iOTA?
Well, so I have two kids. One is 19 and one is 11. So when I'm not working, I'm a mom who takes my daughter to gymnastics and helps my son with his decisions in college. I'm also a wife, you know, and I'm a owner of two cats. And I love plants, so I have a full house of plants that I take care of. And I actually do like to travel a lot, so I try to go to different places in the world and see, you know, different parts of the world. So I like traveling a lot.
I'm wondering, do you have any advice on work-life balance for our listeners? I think that's a topic that's, you know, really important in IT and in, you know, careers in general.
I think it's a difficult topic. It's a topic of a personal choice. In my life, you know, the work-life balance topic didn't kind of come to my mind until a certain age when I realized I needed to have some, you know, because my kids didn't see me because I was constantly working. But I think it's an important topic because, you know, if you're just working and focusing on career and focusing on, you know, your, you know, professional life only, then you lose out on many things in life. And I think it's a very important balance that you need to strike. And everybody does it in a different way. So for me personally, I made a decision to, you know, never miss my kids' activities, no matter what, be it, you know, gymnastics competition or important concerts that may be boring, but I still go and see them. Because I think it's important to spend time with your family and do things in life that enrich you personally. I like, for example, reading psychology and philosophy, so I dedicate myself to reading every day for a certain period of time. Because otherwise, you get burnt out very quickly, and life becomes pretty routine, and you lose, you know, your focus. And I know a lot of people are kind of talking about work-life balance, and it depends on the stage in life they are in. But, you know, the sooner people realize that life is as important as work and, you know, professional life cannot replace your personal life, I think the better.
All right. And very important, based on everything I just heard, how do you caffeine throughout the day?
Well, I take one in the morning and I take one during the day. But I kind of don't think about it.
So, but coffee, tea, any, soda, anything?
No,
like that?
I don't drink soda. I try to drink a lot of water, and I definitely have cappuccino in the morning and then once in the afternoon. But I have cut down on my caffeine a lot because, you know, as you age, you know, coffee is not good for you. It kind of spikes your blood pressure. So I'm trying to stay healthy.
I know I'm trying to enjoy my prime coffee years for as long as I can over here. It's a vital part of the Gestalt IT experience.
Yeah, I actually do like coffee a lot, so I try to limit myself to 2 cups a day.
My dad tried to do that, but he ended up just buying bigger and bigger mugs, so I don't think it really worked for him. Oksana, who would you like to see answer the IT origins questions? Anyone you would recommend that we talk to?
Well, I mean, we hear a lot from like very famous people, you know, because, you know, social media makes it more available. I guess, you know, what I'm interested in is hearing from people who are running small companies and startups, more, you know, not anybody specific or, you know, any individual who we may know, but maybe people like myself who are not very known, who live everyday experience and are running companies. You know, there are many companies, like, for example, you know, a company like Alation, you know, and people who run that, as opposed to, you know, Bill Gates or, you know, somebody who's big who we hear from constantly. It's very interesting to hear different entrepreneurs and their experiences on their journey from kind of companies that are trying to make it, not necessarily who made it in unicorn way. The other person is, you know, obviously, if you have an opportunity, I would love to hear what Rohit has to say. He's a co-founder of the company, and, you know, I think it would be worth hearing his perspective.
And yeah, you know, kind of bringing up your co-founder, where can people find more information if they're interested in kind of learning more about IO Tahoe?
So IO Tahoe, you can find more information on LinkedIn, on our website, iotahoe.com, as well as on Facebook. It's all iotahoe.com. So we're pretty active on social channels, including Twitter, Facebook, and LinkedIn. But obviously, our website has a lot of information. And recently, we updated the information to include even more kind of interesting perspectives on what we're thinking about our product, and we're putting more and more white papers in terms of what we're thinking about the future.
I'd like to once again thank Oksana Sokolovsky for her time in this interview. For more information and more IT origin stories, head on over to gestaltit.com. IT Origins is produced by Rich Straffolino and Gestalt IT.